At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just going full-time in NASCAR is a dream come true. Now you have Dad in the Rod Osterlund Racing number 2. It's a really strong rookie field. You got Dad, you got Terry Labonte, Harry Gant, Joe Milliken.
Dad's raw, he's mistake-prone, he's eager, hungry, and he's going to be causing quite a stir on the circuit throughout the season.
Right now, Dale Earnhardt has jumped into the lead. Buddy Baker is second and Walker.
High speeds, door-to-door action, and all-out mayhem.
Trouble in turn two. It's look out, Dale Earnhardt right below us. A slam the wall with a blown tire.
A serious injury that might derail his rookie campaign. But then, the eventual comeback. I'm looking back on my dad's rookie season, before he was the Intimidator, and I'm uncovering details that I didn't even know. And this happens to be the greatest NASCAR season in history, 1979. This is Becoming Earnhardt.
We're live here on Dirty Mo Live.
All right.
Very special Tuesday. It's not many Tuesdays where we get to basically preview a brand new Dirty Mo show.
Yep.
Going on the airwaves. Andrew Curlin here with Dalton Greco and, of course, Dale Earnhardt Jr. Thanks for joining us today.
It's been a while since I've been on this show, but this is for good reason. Mm-hmm. And really excited. Tomorrow is the episode 1 of Becoming Earnhardt. It's a new show, audio podcast series that we are creating here at Dirty Mo Media. And but I just want to tell people that I've been working on this idea for so long. I've been going to Mike Davis for at least 2 years trying to tell him I want to create an audio story of some sort, whether it's one episode of the Dale Jr. Download or it's a series. I want to write a story, right, and narrate it. And there's so many cool things that's happened in our sport that I just want to dive into deeper and learn more about. And one of the stories, so to get a little deeper into this. So
let's do it.
In 1969, you know, they had the boycott at Talladega for the, you know, the drivers formed this this union, mm-hmm. if you will, and boycotted the race. Bill France stood his ground, said, whatever. They all left. Richard Petty, David Pearson, all the big names drove out of the racetrack, right? Taillights in the dust. The select few that stayed would end up running a race that included Grand Am cars, which is kind of like an Xfinity series from back in the day. And so Richard Childress had like a Mustang, and you know, there's a, you know, he's running the Grand Am race on Saturday. And so anyway, there's a great story about this in a Stock Car Racing magazine, which was a monthly issued magazine back then. And right around the time it happened, I found a story in one of these publications, and it really spells it out, like what happened moment to moment.
Yeah.
There was a lot of moments in the garage, a standoff, if you will, where you'd look across the garage and see, you know, Richard Petty and Bobby Allison, you know, animated with Bill Frantz Sr., and nobody's backing down. And so there was and you know, then they'd go and break apart and they delegate amongst their parties and then get back together and argue more. And this goes on for days, right?
Right.
And eventually, you know, so anyways, that we all know about that boycott, but this dove in with such detail. And if I take that article as the sort of inspiration and dive into every other publication that I can find about NASCAR from that moment and dig up more and more little quirks about the story, I think you could create a cool animated show about it, right? Or not an animated show, but a show I'd narrate. That would basically take the place of like a guest show on the Dale Jr. Download, right? Whether it might be a 1 or 3 part series. I've been trying to talk to Mike about doing that. I want to do that. I want to write it. I want to create it. And finally, I found these scrapbooks my aunt made. This was several months ago. So she hands me these scrapbooks. You'll learn more about all of this in the episode that comes out tomorrow. I found these scrapbooks and I'm like, maybe this is cool enough for Mike to let me do an audio, you know, narrated show about. And so I take him these scrapbooks and I literally like, physically marked, bookmarked some spots in here that I knew would be good stories to tell him, right?
You got to hit him with the good, highlights first.
So I sit down in Mike's office and I'm like, listen to this story. Blah, 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 blah. Listen to this story, Mike. Blah, blah, blah. And look at this. Dad, this is an article Dad wrote himself, right? I remember reading it, and he's like, this is amazing. I like it. And I'm like, I want to write a podcast. I want to write a spoken podcast about telling the story. And so Bobby Marcos, who is our sort of expert historian, he and I got together. We formed a basic Bible, if you will, of a place where we just funneled notes and ideas and thoughts into this. So basically, we started writing the script. And me personally, like, I don't know if this matters to people that will listen to the show tomorrow, but I personally, like, have sat in my house and on vacation trips and for hours reading and writing and typing and you know, sorting through what would be good to include to make this more compelling. And so... this has my DNA in it, man. This has my fingerprints all over it. I'm extremely passionate about this. When we set out to really create this, I'm thinking, man, you know, maybe this isn't as cool as I think it is. Maybe this is a niche thing. But I will say, now that I've heard Dirty Mo Media put its fingerprints on it,
yeah,
all the company coming together and throwing their ideas in there and the sound elements. And what a sound element basically is like when I say, man, in the last two laps, David Pearson and Bobby Allison had a duel in this race that was epic. We're going to throw in that MRN audio of the race playing itself out in the last two laps. It jumps off the page, right?
That's exactly
it. It comes to life.
Yeah.
And so once I heard all of those things added in, as Dirty Mo Media does, I'm like, nah, this is bigger than I thought. This is as good as I hoped it could be. I think when people listen to this, they're going to love it. The first episode is the framework of what you're going to get into, right? The first episode is an introduction to the series. We get into the races. We're going to go race by race. Every race, right?
That's awesome.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Right? I'm learning about this in real time with you. We're going to go race to race and whatever happened in between the races, right? There were penalties, probations, injuries, comebacks. There's all kinds of little personal stories happening to Dad throughout the weeks in between races, right? And so we're going to dive into all of that. That starts in episode 2. Episode 1 is an introduction, a table of contents, a cast of characters. We're going to take you back to what 1979 was like in general, so we sort of get you in the frame of mind of where we are. And then when episode 2 starts, we're off to the racetrack. And so it's going to be 8 parts unless we continue to balloon it up. But right now it's at 8 parts. And, episode 2 through 7 are basically the season. And the final episode is we're wrapping it up, and it's a bit of a where they are now. Mm. There'll be a lot of, you know, I think by the time we get to the end of this, there's going to be a, well, what happened to that guy moment.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
For all of us. And we can tell you that. We're going to try to dig in. We're going to try to reach out to some of these people, connect to them, talk to them, ask them where they are.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
2 days ago, I was on the phone with Bill Elliott just for a little stupid anecdote about a Dover race. You know, just some stupid small thing. So, like, hands-on. I'm very hands-on with this. It's been a blast. And this is, this is what I'm all about. History, passion projects like this, man. Learning more about the history, things I thought I knew that have more to them, or I was totally wrong about my opinion of something, and it's totally changed by studying the history of it. And so it's going to be fun to see the reaction from fans, whether that's something they enjoy. And the reason why, we have a scrapbook from 1980.
Exactly.
Right? My aunt sits down, starts doing the scrapbook in real time when Dad gets his very first full-time ride in 1979. She's like, I'm going to do a scrapbook, Dale. You're my brother. I love you. I'm your sister. I'm excited. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to put news articles in this scrapbook. And she was diligent. Remember, like, this is a process that she started that was 10 months long, right? And you would think that you start a project, you're excited at first, you're going hardcore, you're putting in every article you find, and then it kind of thins out over time.
You get
and
busy.
By the end, you're doing the bare
exactly.
minimum, right?
Yeah.
Not at all with this scrapbook from 79 and 80. It's very thorough, and my Aunt Kay is the one who was responsible for it. She actually found them in my mamaw's house and hands them to me. And I'm very thrilled to have them, but to be able to turn it into a project and tell a story is even better. So if this goes well, we have 1980, which is Dad's first championship season.
Right.
Also equally traumatic and dramatic and problematic. You know, there was – I don't want to dive into the details, but there was a lot of crap going on, even in Dad's team, turmoil and splits and problems. And it'll be fun to dive deeper into that to really kind of feel like we are getting to know the cast of characters better.
Right.
You touched on a bunch of things there, but you being a historian, this being your passion project, and one thing I didn't know until you just said it was that you recently discovered these scrapbooks.
In the last in the last 4 or 5 months.
So what was that discovery like and finding out that you hit jackpot, you know?
We were – so my grandmother passed away in the wintertime, and we were, you know, at her house, and it was, you know, we were just kind of, so there's these Tupperware containers full of stuff. Right. Ralph Earnhardt stuff, way old, right?
Yeah.
It, pictures of people I don't even know. And it's, you know, it's kind of cool. At the same time, you're like, man, I wish somebody was here to tell us who these people are.
Right.
But you're going through this great, this just treasure trove of information about your family. I found old race programs and stuff from Ralph's era, from the 50s and 60s,
wow,
with his
wow.
picture in there. And stuff that I don't own, you know, don't possess.
Right.
Even autographs, like Ralph signing the back of a check or something, right? That's so cool to me that he wrote his name. You know, I don't have that.
Right.
You know? And so we're just going through some stuff, and there was some more current stuff, like even 90s and earlier, some of stuff about me with programs with my face on them and stuff. And most of the stuff like that, I'm not interested in. I lived it. I know it. It's too fresh. Now, I may regret not cataloging that stuff 40 years from now, but right now I'm totally into anything from like 1989 and earlier.
Mm-hmm.
These scrapbooks were yellow. I mean, imagine 1979 scrapbooks. They're bright yellow, yeah. Gold flake sort of design. It's kind of cushiony, hardback, but like a little cushion on it. I don't know. It's a weird. The clear peel back, throw the thing in there, and
right.
whack. It's fucking. It's in there, right? And so, she hands me these and goes, these are cool.
Mm-hmm.
These are something I made. And she really didn't get like, she didn't tell me exactly what it was. I open it up and I'm looking through the pages. I'm like, oh man, this is from the era that I love. Look at this, 79, 80. This has got to be 79, 80. And I'm like, this is like in chronological order. And she's like, yeah, I did it throughout its whole season. I was doing all these articles. It's mostly local papers, Kannapolis, Concord.
Yeah.
But it's the same writers, right?
Right.
The same writers for those papers were usually the same guys that were out on the beat for the NASCAR series. I recognize the names, Tom Higgins and all these different guys. And so I'm like, these are great. And it's a lot. And some races are thin. Sometimes, like for a couple races, it's literally just the finishing order. But then there'll be other races where there's multiple articles about the same thing. Like, Dad wins a pole somewhere, and there's, like, three articles about him winning a pole, right?
That's cool.
And
that's
cool.
That's in depth.
Well, it is. But I will say that where it was thin, it forced me to go find, you know, content around that race. Like, dig in and go, well, what happened to Dad this day, right? I see he finished seventh, three laps down. But why? You know, did
mm-hmm.
he, you know, what happened? And so there was a lot. There's a lot of places to go find information, and I went to a lot of different places that I had access to. Some places that I knew had information that I just didn't have access to. But I, I'm like, man, I'm really impressed you made these. You got both 79 and 80. I love that I have this. And then, like a couple days, I started reading in some of the articles, and a couple days later, I was thinking, all right. You know, I know there's a lot of Dale Earnhardt fans out there, and I know they know the numbers, they know the championships, they know the race wins, they know the year he was a rookie, but they might not know the details, and I don't know the details.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's all learn this together. Let's figure out a way to tell this story. And we're, I don't know how many years removed from that, 45 years removed from that. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's people out there who've never heard it, don't know anything about it, right? And, you know, one of the coolest things that I think I could do as a son that loves his dad would be to continue to tell his story to people who don't know it. And so I think it'd be a great opportunity. If, like I say, if it goes well, we're going to do 80. We have all that ready to rock. It's a lot of work for all of us, but it's fun. It's rewarding.
You know what's cool about this whole project and just hearing you talk about it is like my introduction, like you just said, to your dad was the black number three car. Right. And even that was, physically with a license plate that was on the front of my dad's truck, and it was a black number three. And so to hear you talk about, you know, chronicling this for your dad and my connection to racing with my dad,
yeah.
It's so neat because you're exactly right. It's what a son would want to do for his father.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like you mentioned, this is a passion project. Hearing the first listening party that we did And hearing your passion come through, it's just true to what we do here at Dirty Mo Media. And that's put out good stories with passion behind it and really take care of the sport that we've known to grow and love. Yeah. And so this is like, you know, the true origin story for so many race fans, even for someone like me that's going to know about now the number two Earnhardt and not the number three that I didn't see, you know. So I'm super excited for this. I haven't even listened to it yet. And like the full thing, I'm waiting. Like
we've been waiting for the full
I'm going to wait to be
I can't believe it. I got to listen to it with Mike yesterday.
Yeah.
And I mean, even yesterday, we were listening to it. And I'm like, hey, Mike, you know, I see we got to fix this.
Like the last minute tweet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I want it to be perfect.
Yeah, of course. I want this to be perfect. And so I'm going to listen to, you know, we're going to be in that post process of making sure it's dialed in. And you were talking about it a minute ago, Don. When you think about the Dale Earnhardt that we all know, it's the Intimidator, black number three, it's the Man in Black, it's all of those things. And that's the image of him that I have as well.
Yeah.
When I was reading through all of this and going and writing this show, it really brought to the surface the raw rookie that was mistake prone, that was naive, and like in the media, all of his comments were really driven toward trying to gain respect from the veterans. He was concerned about them respecting him. He wanted them to respect him, and he wanted to learn from mistakes. He admitted mistakes. You know, he would shift years down the road to this hard shelled, I don't make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. what I do is, I do it my way, the highway. You know, he shifted into this different person, right? And what we get to learn about and remember, what we get to be refreshed with, is that in this moment in 1979, he was eager and excited and thrilled and over his skis and problematic and in these articles that we'll read, he does a bi-monthly article.
Yeah.
Right? For a lot of publications. This was probably in the Grand National scene, but it was also in other publications throughout the year. And it was an effort by his publicist and PR group. There was a couple of people that he was friends with, that he was working with back in that time, that thought this would be a great idea for fans to get to know you. You're going to write a bi-monthly article. Dad had an eighth grade education. He did not walk up one day and go, y'all, I want to do a bi-monthly article. He did not.
I got a great idea. Yeah.
They came to him and said, you should do this. We're going to do this. You're going to tell it. You're going to tell us in your own words how your season's going. We'll do this together and we'll put it in a publication. And so he writes these articles and it's him in his own words. And as I'm reading them to you in these episodes, these are probably the funnest parts because we get to hear straight from his mouth in his head what he's thinking. And he dives into like, well, you know, at Texas, this happened and this is why we wrecked and da da da. But he also talks about putting a roof on his mom's house and, being a husband or a son or, you know, and it's sort of the peek behind the curtain, if you will, that, you know, the access to be able to hear from him in this moment. During this season, it's funny because they only planned to, you know, they tell Dad, they're like, we're going to do it through May. Early in the season, they're going to do this bi-monthly thing, and then they're going to quit. So it had been a couple, three or four articles, right? And he's having such a reasonably good year, and the articles, I guess, are getting so well-received that they tell him he has to continue them. And he almost says at the very next one, he's like, I guess we're going to keep doing this.
You can hear that in his voice,
I really hadn't planned on it, but, you know, I'm going to keep doing it. That's... And I'm not going to promise that I'm doing them to the end of the year. We're just going to do them until we don't want to do them anymore. And it's kind of like homework, you know.
Right.
But as he starts to talk, it's like he loosens up and he gets into telling his side of things, right, in each article. And it's really fun, especially when we go into the injury. You know, later in the year, he has this bad, bad injury, knocks him out of the car for a few weeks, and we get to hear from him. I'd never talked to Dad about this. I got a picture of me and him sitting on an It's like a maroon orange couch in his lake house that he apparently just moved into. I learned that in this whole thing. I didn't know when they moved into that house. I didn't live there till 81. All right. So I'm not in this house.
Right.
He moves into it in 78. As we learn in the story and he talks about, I got a picture of me sitting on the couch with him at his lake house, him wearing his collarbone braces that are allowing his injury to heal. And I've got that picture. I have no context of it. And all of this, writing this story, has built context around this awesome picture that I have of me and my dad when I was, I guess, 4.5 years old.
That's crazy.
You filled the pieces in.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, I know the year that this was taken. I know what was going on in his life, obviously by the braces and stuff. But I know that he just recently moved into this home. I don't live there yet. I must be visiting him on a weekend. You know, to get in the weeds, when I moved in with Dad in 81, I have like one single memory of being with him before that, right? Like a visitation,
right?
I remember being at his lake house and spending the night, and it's like this very, very real, really small, brief memory of only a couple minutes. But now I know, you know, that we might have went there more than I remember or recall, right? I often wonder, like, how much did I see my dad during the time he was divorced from mom till 81 when we move in? So 79, 80, was I around? Did he see me? Did he want to see me? How often did I get to go there with his racing and everything else? And so he has this injury. He's home and not going to the races, and we went there, me and Kelly, I suppose, right? Finding out, learning things like that, is been so cool for me in this whole thing, and hopefully we have that same experience digging into 1980. We start uncovering and adding context to images and photos and things that I own and have in my own possession.
Yeah,
you know, and you mentioned the most fun part was reading those articles from your dad, and it kind of makes me think, like, whenever I see an old picture of my dad, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, like, you forget, like, he was the same age as me type of thing. Mm-hmm. And you going, obviously, through your entire Cup career, he can tell you things about what he faced when he was a rookie, but now you get to kind of read firsthand his thoughts and see it and kind of have that history come alive. Was that neat to kind of just be able to compare what your emotions were entering the Cup Series and navigating times and, like, all right, well, this is kind of his firsthand thoughts on that too.
Yeah, I think that was fun to relate to his emotions and his anxieties and nerves, but also his sheer determination to make it.
Mm-hmm.
He had, you know, one of the things that I always was amazed by with Dad was, even in the, like, he's been, you know, in the mid-90s. He would go to the racetrack and race like his freaking life depended on it, you know, and he raced hard and mean and never changed. And he had that edge about him and that meanness and orneriness and grit that you would see in a young rookie that's like broke and doing everything he can to make sure he stays there. Right. He raced that way as a rookie and kept that energy till the end. And I never understood, like, what motivated him to do that. People relax. People chill. People get comfortable. People, you know, settle into a role, right? But that hunger and mean and ornery side that was always there in that race car never changed. And, you know, he was special in that way, because, you know, no matter how successful he got or how much money he made, his driven passion and intensity behind the wheel was the same. And man, it's hard not to change. It's hard not to change fame, celebrity, or even just job security and comfort. You go out and win a bunch and you become a champion early. it's easy to go, man, you know, I made it. I don't have to,
right?
I don't have to be an a-hole, or you know, or, yeah, you know what? You go ahead. This spot's not important right now. You know, I'll see if I can win, but you know, I'm gonna race more, you know, reasonably. He never changed his approach. You know, he was just as you see it in, you know, in when I'm diving into this 1979 project, you can see that, you know, the comments from the other racers about how he's driving too aggressively. He's got to learn this. He's got to learn that. And Dad's like, yeah, I'm sorry, man. Yeah, I got a little excited there. You know, that was sort of his response to it. Yeah, I just, you know, couldn't believe I was running with the leaders, man. I got really excited, you know, and I'll do better. But on the track behind the wheel, like, he never did change that.
Right.
You know, he got better and smarter, but that to, you know, putting the bumper to you and leaning on you and just taking a race away from you, he never changed how hungry he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's remarkable. And it's going to be so cool to just see the origin of that.
I agree. Know. Yeah. We get to learn Dale before he won a race, before he led a lap, before he became a champion. And it's a very different Dale Earnhardt than the one I think we all got used to.
And I'm looking forward to seeing, like, where is that evolution, you know, especially when you follow him that next year, that's a completely different season.
One last thing I want to say, you know, and this was important to me, right? When we started talking about this project, Mike is absolutely involved, and Mike loves the Dale Earnhardt story, right? And Mike wants to tell the Dale Earnhardt rookie 1979 story. But one thing that was really important to me was that I found all these funny, quirky little anecdotes that might not involve Dad, might involve other drivers or whatever. And we talk about that, some silly season stuff between different teams and whatnot, and just funny stories. There's a funny thing that happened to Richard Petty the night before the 79 Daytona 500. There's a funny thing about Cale Yarborough's ride home from that race. There's some funny things that happened to Lenny Pond in his career or throughout the year. I find these stories while digging for information about this season. I'll find these stories. I'm going to go, man, that's too good not to include. And I really fought for them to stay. And so as it's a story about Dad's rookie year, it's also a story about 1979 being arguably the most important year in NASCAR history. The Daytona 500 is certainly arguably one of the most important races in NASCAR history for 1979. The flag-to-flag coverage, the fight, all the 16 million viewers. That's well known. We learned some new things about that race I didn't know. Certainly about Dad's experience in that race that I didn't even know that aren't part of the broadcast or the, you know, things that are readily available to you. But, you know, we dive into the rest of the year and find all these funny little weird things that happen, like for the Wood Brothers, Neil Bonnet, and just chance and lucky moments and breaks that we include. So it's a story about NASCAR. It's a story about that season. It's a story about a rookie that would become one of the most respected and revered drivers in the history of the sport, all encompassed in one thing.
Man, you got me fired up.
Yeah.
That sounds good. I can't wait for this. Well, Dale, thanks for stopping by Dirty Mo Live and putting this whole thing together.
Yeah.
You know, this was something, as Mike said today on the download, that everyone should go check out. This was kind of, you know, founded from your passions and your interests. And, man, we can't wait. First episode drops. Yeah, go.
First episode drops tomorrow. And then every Wednesday, we'll continue to release episode 2, 3, 4. You know, it's going to take place of our guest segment for a little while during the summer. I think you'll be pleased with what we have for you. So I hope you enjoy it. It's something I've been working on and working hard on, and our whole team's come together to get this out in a quick way for you. So we're excited to let you have it.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Get excited because it's dropping tomorrow. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Dirty Mo Live.
We'll see y'all. Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.